next planet Thanos had identified as being in danger of Titan's fate. Chapter 32. This time he chose not to speak to the rulers of the planet. Denagar was a balkanized world, made up of more than 30 different territories, ruled by 16 different forms of government. There was no global ruling body to appeal to, and going to each territory would take too much time and amount to nothing in any event. Even if he could convince the leaders of most of the territories, any holdouts would mean no consensus. A waste of his time. Instead, he gambled on the tactic that had backfired on Titan but could work here. He projected a hologram of himself worldwide, explaining the situation and his solution. On Titan, his people's predisposition to distrust him had made this gambit a failure. But here, on Denagar, no one knew him, and no one had any reason to distrust him. He projected the hologram live, speaking in calm, measured tones. Cha encouraged him to smile frequently. People trust those who smile. He was both pleased and surprised that Cha was still with him. He'd expected that the killing of Fenlop would have chased away the Syrian for good. But days after they broke orbit over the planet, Cha had emerged from his chambers and a lengthy meditation.
We have the same end goal, you and I, Thanos. We both seek peace, equilibrium, balance. I am willing to explore your means to this end.
Thanos could not and would not let it show. But he was glad to have Cha with him, even as he badgered Thanos to smile.
Is that more received wisdom from the universe?
No, Thanos. It's just part of life.
Thanos had reluctantly agreed. He punctuated his entreaty with smiles, with gentle gestures. He implored them. He importuned them. He had charts and graphs that bolstered his argument, proving that
within 3 generations, Denagar's natural resources will have been exploited beyond a tipping point. Your water will be so contaminated that it will be unfilterable by current technology. A rare influenza variant currently percolating on your easternmost equatorial continent will evolve to spread via airborne vectors, and your atmosphere will be so polluted that global climate change will cause radical swings in local weather patterns. You will suffer tremendous hurricanes, for which you are unprepared, as well as rising ocean levels that will swamp your coastal habitats. You may think, who is this man? And why should we heed him? I am Thanos of Titan, and I have issued this warning twice before on 2 different planets. They are both now dead worlds, with not a single breathing soul on either. One of them is my own home, Titan. A planet of surpassing beauty, technology, and generosity. Yet my people did not heed my warning, and now that world is as dead as the vacuum of space. And so, people of Denagar, I implore you, mind my words. My solution seems radical and heartless, I know, but trust me, it will work. You will sacrifice greatly, yes, but you will also benefit greatly. I have spoken directly to the people rather than to your ruling class, so that you might all know the truth and, in your numbers, find the wisdom that is often lacking in leaders. This comms channel will remain open. I await your reply.
He switched off the outgoing audio and looked at Cha.
Well,
he said. Cha slid his hand over the control surface, generating a hologram of the surface of Denagar. Sanctuary was a smallish dot in orbit. As they watched, lines rose up from Denagar, heading for the ship.
Superatmospheric fusion warheads launched,
Cha said with a sigh.
Evasive maneuvers,
Thanos barked,
and unleash the Chitauri.
The Battle of Denagar was both shorter and far bloodier than the Battle of Fenlop 11. The Denagarese had multiple militaries and did not hesitate to use them. In retrospect, Thanos thought the length of his oratory gave them time to prepare and launch an attack, He had assumed a level of rationality and intelligence on the part of the Denegarese. He would not suffer such presumptions in the future. Fortunately, his Chitauri were more than up to the task. Bolstered by reinforcements from the homeworld, and now seasoned by one battle, the experience of which was instantly inculcated in the entire warrior clan, thanks to the hive mind, the Chitauri ranged over Denegar like a swarm of maggots on a corpse. The planet wasn't dead, but it soon would be. Thanos watched from the safety of Sanctuary, which Cha had moved to a higher parking orbit, beyond the range of the super-atmospheric missiles. He stood at the fore of the bridge, hands clasped behind his back, watching the planet grind its slow turn beneath him, imagining that he could see individual explosions below.
"They could have lived, Cha," he said through clenched teeth. "Half of them could have lived. Thrived. Gone on to gestate new generations. Damn it, Cha, why don't they want to live?"
He thumped his fist against the panel of hardened crystal that formed the window.
"Why?"
"We cannot know the path of the universe," Cha told him. "We can only walk it."
"I will continue on this path,"
Thanos seethed, his breath fogging the window.
"Until the path is no longer necessary. Send scavenger units to the surface with our shuttlecraft to strip the planet of everything we need."
Cha nodded and turned on his heel.
"Oh, and Cha?"
"Yes?"
"I'm tired of flitting around space in this glorified cargo pallet. See if there are any intact warships we can appropriate."
By the time they attempted to persuade a third planet, Vishalaya, word had spread. The mad titan Thanos, warlord Thanos, had come. They were met at the edge of the solar system by jump ships and dreadnoughts. Thanos had hoped that the slaughters on Fenlop and Denegar would have served as warnings to future worlds, omens that they should heed his advice. If the military vessels gathering on his long-range sensors were any indication, apparently not. The new Sanctuary was a military jump ship that had never gotten off the ground during the Battle of Denegar. Sitting in its command chair, Thanos finally felt as though he had the means to execute his will.
"Attention, Sanctuary," a voice crackled over an open hailing frequency. "This is the RSS Executrix of Her Majesty Cathar's Navy. Turn back or be fired upon."
Thanos sighed. The other sat to his left, Cha to his right. Thanos waved at the air as though something stank.
"Kill them," he said. "And then we'll see if Her Majesty Cathar is willing to discuss the horrors her people will soon face."
Thanos watched on a hollow as his leviathans swung around from the sides of Sanctuary and plowed into the RSS Executrix. Since they were primarily living tissue, the leviathans didn't show up on most conventional sensors. They were perhaps the most perfect stealth weapon in space warfare. In short order, they disabled the Executrix and ripped open its hull. Bodies spilled out into space. Other ships had begun a rescue run, but Sanctuary's photon guns held them off until the leviathans could engage.
"It's too easy," Thanos murmured.
"Perhaps the ease of your victory here will compel this Queen Cathar to parley with you," Cha said. "Take you seriously."
"Your optimism is welcome in this instance, but unwarranted, I fear. Anyone who greets us with a show of force is not going to listen to our proposal with an open mind. Prepare our forces for a planet-wide death sweep."
Thanos heaved himself out of his chair.
"I will be in my quarters. Alert me if this queen calls, begging for mercy."
The queen did indeed call, and she did indeed beg for mercy. Thanos explained what mercy was. 50% of her people dead, including her.
"You must be mad," she said via hologram to Thanos, who studied her with the bored listlessness of a snake at noon.
Her species was bipedal, with a distinctive whorl pattern of raised flesh just beneath the hairline, descending to just above the eyes. It was hypnotic to watch.
I hope your arithmetic skills are superior to your military acumen, Your Majesty. Half your population is better than none.
We are not weaklings, as on Fenlop, or disorganized like the Denegarese. You will not slaughter us all, Warlord Thanos.
He leaned forward. That whirl. It seemed almost to move on its own.
I have no wish to slaughter you all, Your Majesty. But I cannot bear the thought of your world continuing to suffer under such benighted idiocy. Surrender now and offer up half your people. It's simple math.
Try us, she said, and disconnected the comms.
Thanos left his quarters and strode down the corridor to the bridge. Within were the other and Cha.
You were listening in?
He asked.
Of course, said Cha.
Launch the assault.
As you command, said the other.
In a parking orbit around the planet Vigilia, Thanos stared at the endless stream of shuttlecraft soaring from the planet's surface to his cargo ship, now rechristened Mercy. Restocking the Chitauri army was taking longer than the conquest and depopulating of the planet itself had. In the reflection from the window, he caught a glimpse of Cha approaching him.
Three planets, Cha. Three. In how long? How long since we left Titan?
Cha spoke after a moment, confirming Thanos' math.
Nearly a year.
Three worlds in a year. At this pace,
he shook his head.
Too slow. We need to find a way to identify these worlds and speak to them en masse. And we need to be more persuasive.
Yes. The endless slaughter is enervating.
Enervating?
Thanos asked.
Such killing, Cha shrugged. No matter how necessary it may be, such killing weighs heavily on your soul, no doubt. It does on mine.
Thanos laughed, a hearty, honest laugh.
Weighs heavily on my soul? No, Cha. Once, perhaps, I saw killing as a necessity, the better of two options. It was pragmatic and expedient.
He paused, considering.
It still is those things, of course. But, Cha, I've come to the conclusion that...
He leaned forward, both hands flat against the window.
Killing is an absolute, universal good. Killing clears the chaff from the wheat. Killing subtracts that which would multiply into danger. Killing obviates crisis. Focusing on the killing is the wrong perspective in any event. We're not looking to kill half of them. We're trying to save half of them.
If killing is a universal good, Cha said, speaking slowly, anticipating an interruption.
When none came, he went on.
All things serve their own purpose. There is a purpose to all this death. We have merely yet to see it.
He put a hand on Thanos' shoulder, patted him there.
We are guided by the universe itself, by its ineffable quest for harmony. We will continue on the proper path.
Thanos was amazed.
After all this time, after everything you've done and witnessed, you actually still believe there is a path to universal peace. Unreal.
Deep down, Thanos, so do you. Why else do you keep me around, if not to remind you of what you believe?
Thanos grunted, curled his upper lip. Then, without a word, he stalked away from the bridge. Chapter 33 Thanos knew that his cause was just, and his path righteous, but he also understood that most intellects were neither refined nor enlightened enough to comprehend it. He resigned himself to a life of misapprehension, of unnecessary conflict in the face of brute and savage denial of plain, obvious facts. And so it was a pleasant surprise to him that, as his infamy spread, there were those who not only agreed with him, but also sought him out as he sacked their worlds. A pittance among the billions dead, yes. But the idea that even one person out of a planet's entire population might heed his warning was a greater number than experience had taught him to expect. He took them on, of course, and with the genetic largesse of his experiments on the Chitauri, he modified and empowered them, making them his vanguard into the universe. In turn, they adored him like a father. They gave themselves new names, rechristening themselves in his honor. They were Ebony Maw and Corvus Glaive, Proxima Midnight and Cull Obsidian, names dredged from the grimmest pits of fevered dreams and black omens. He set them loose upon the universe in his name, preaching his dire warnings, seeking out new worlds and new places to conquer. They called themselves his children, but they were not. They were his tools, his weapons. Sent out into the void in pairs or as a group, they heralded his eventual coming, guided his forces on the ground, ruthlessly enforced his will. They also inspired him.
"We have been too thorough,"
Thanos told Cha one day as they sped between systems. His underlings were already ahead of them, on a world called Zeho-Beri, one ripe for Thanos's brand of global modification.
"If there is even one person on a planet who believes in our cause, that life is worth saving and exploiting."
"So, no more wholesale slaughter?"
Cha asked a little too eagerly.
"We have enough plunder from our conquests to fuel our cause for another century. Perhaps we should try balance on a worldly scale."
Cha raised an eyebrow.
"Mercy? From Thanos?"
"A different mercy,"
Thanos chided him.
"Imbalance still exists. The mercy of the grave has sufficed until now. But going forward, we will be more thoughtful in our purges. It has been safer to eliminate entire populations so no one would remain to seek us out in the name of revenge. But now we will try something different. We will enact the Titan Protocol, eliminating half of each world. And as those worlds recover, they will stand as examples to others that our way works."
Cha considered this.
"We'll also want to be sure to eliminate any and all military capacity," he pointed out. "Otherwise, we'll have to watch our backs more so than usual."
Thanos grinned with sheer pleasure.
"Pragmatism from the idealist. I'll convert you yet, Cha."
From this angle, the small planet Zeho-Beri hung in space, a brilliant green-blue jewel on the black velvet backdrop of a starless nebula. They had entered the Silicon star system, with its 12 planets, only one of which was habitable. Zeho-Beri, home to 3 billion sentient souls, all of whom were guaranteed to die in a few short generations, unless Thanos was obeyed. He was not, and so he attacked. He watched the assault from the bridge of his ship, as he'd done so many times before. From up here, it was merely a light show. Occasional bursts of yellow and orange from the surface of the planet. Nuclear fire rippled along coastlines, spilling like lava from the shore. He skimmed his battle plans and saw that nothing needed to be adjusted. The Zeho-Beri had made no moves or countermoves that he had not already anticipated. The conclusion was foregone. He realized, to his surprise, that in the midst of war, he was bored.
"When did genocide become rote?"
he asked Cha. Beside him, Cha looked up from the small hollow plate that streamed data direct from the Chitauri Leviathans.
"Are you having misgivings, Thanos?"
"And if I were?"
Cha clucked his tongue and waggled the tips of his pointed ears, something he only did when deep in thought.
"Wholesale slaughter is an egregious evil," he said at last, "but not when in service to a greater good. Still, there are many paths to victory. You can always choose another one."
Thanos snorted.
"Victory itself is meaningless to me. I only want to help."
Cha's lips quirked into a concerned mien.
"I know where this is headed. You know I don't like it when you join the Chitauri in battle. It's dangerous.
More dangerous is allowing a distance between myself and our battles. It may grow and mutate into distance between myself and my cause. I need these experiences, Cha. I need to see the devastation for myself, as I did on Titan, to rededicate myself, to remind myself what we're fighting for.
Consulting the holoplate, Cha nodded to himself.
Well, there's an area on the western continent that's been swept clean. You could—
No. As always, I need to see the suffering.
He knew that witnessing only the antiseptic aftermath of the Chitauri's cleansing of the world meant nothing. It was like observing the end result of a surgery. You learn nothing from the stitches and the scar. Only by watching the surgeon's hands in the blood and the viscera could you come to comprehend the mechanics of medicine.
It means nothing if I do not live it,
he told Cha. He thought back to the days before the massacre aboard the Blood Edda, how he had used his own hands to torture and kill Vathlas. The feel of the Asgardian's blood, tacky and slick at the same time, between his culpable fingers.
Not a chance, Cha said resolutely. You've done it before, and every time it was too big a chance to take. We just can't risk it.
Thanos turned to his friend and curled his lip in a parody of amusement.
I was not asking permission, Cha.
It's too risky,
Cha insisted, swallowing hard but standing his ground.
We can't take the chance of something happening to you.
We,
Thanos said in his deepest and most intimidating tone,
do not make the decisions on this ship.
Defiant, Cha pulled back his shoulders and thrust out his chest. He and Thanos glared at each other for long moments. Cha swallowed hard.
Thanos, please, think about what you are proposing, what you're risking.
I am prepared. I've trained with the Chitauri for a long time. I have my battle armor, which they forged for me to my exacting specifications. No harm will come to me, my friend.
In the end, Cha surrendered, as Thanos had known he would from the beginning. That was, in fact, why he valued Cha so much as a friend. Cha pushed back, but never too much. On the surface of Zeho-Beri, Thanos strode through the remains of a village on what had been one of the northern continents. It was summer in this particular spherical cap of Zeho-Beri, and the heat bore down on him, mitigated by only the passing shadows cast by great plumes of smoke from nearby, where his Chitauri warriors had set off a plethora of bombs. The village was in ruins, its buildings and infrastructure reduced to rubble under the unrelenting assault of the Leviathans and Chitauri weaponry. Overhead, his soldiers zipped through the sky on their war skiffs, while on the ground, infantry surrounded him, a hilariously ineffective protective shield, since Thanos towered over the Chitauri by half a meter, resplendent in his blue and gold battle armor. Bodies, burned, bloodied, littered what was left of a street. A brace of Chitauri dragged the corpses out of the way as Thanos and his retinue passed. Along both sides of the road, his troops stood at attention. In the distance was a massive arch, beautiful and resplendent in its design. He was pleased that it survived the war. Beauty had its place in the universe, and should always be left unsullied when possible. The smell of blood was in the air, along with burned flesh, and terror, which had its own peculiar odor, the stench of overactive adrenal glands. The Zeho-Beri people were green-skinned, tall and lean, their bodies stacked as well and as easily as any others. Behind a planked barricade, a woman huddled in fear with a child. Her daughter, he could tell. As the Chitauri encircled them, something amazing happened. Something that instilled in Thanos a gratitude that he'd witnessed it. The girl, acting on an instinct Thanos had never beheld before, moved and interposed herself between her mother and the Chitauri. In that moment of shock and amazement, Thanos almost missed the opportunity to act. At the last possible instant, he ordered the Chitauri to stand down temporarily. A child. sacrificing herself for her mother. It was supposed to be the other way around. Thanos' contempt for the mother was rivaled only by his astonishment in the girl. There was something about her. He could not tell. He had no words for it, and this alone almost paralyzed him. She said nothing, merely gazed up at him without fear, without reproach.
"What is your name?"
he asked, holding out his hand.
"Gamora,"
she said. And marvel of marvels, she took his hand. He could not remember the last time he'd felt the touch of another's flesh without violent intent. A warmth suffused him. And he realized her mother was about to die. The Chitauri advanced, and Ebony Maw was chattering away in the background. Maw, so appropriately named, as he never did learn when to shut his mouth. The Chitauri were like a computer program. They would execute their mission without fail, or thought unless deterred. Thanos swept along Gamora and brought her to the archway, away from the violence about to be perpetrated upon her mother. Still, the girl craned her neck, twisting and turning for a glimpse of her parent. Even though Gamora's mother was useless and contemptible, Thanos could not let the girl suffer the sight of her death. To distract her, he reached into a compartment on his armor and withdrew a jetted double dirk, a small, boxy handle from which sprang two short blades. Proxima Midnight had found it on some primitive world she'd been exploring, and had brought it to him as a gift. It was nearly useless in any sort of real combat, but he carried it with him, as a reminder. Not of Midnight's generosity, but of something else.
"Look,"
he told Gamora, popping out both blades.
"Perfectly balanced, as all things should be."
He held it out to her on one finger, the weapon poised and stable. She turned to watch him and the blade, her eyes widening at the sight of it. He took her small hand and balanced the double dirk on her finger. It wobbled for a moment, but steadied.
"See?"
he told her.
"You have it already."
She smiled, pleased with herself. In the background, the Chitauri murdered her mother. But Gamora didn't notice. Chapter 34. Aboard Sanctuary, Thanos gazed at a hologram of Gamora as she slept in a secure room not far from his own. Cha burst in without signaling, as he often did, an affront that usually annoyed Thanos at the very least. But not today. Today he cared only for the girl, still asleep, and what would come next.
"What are you doing?" Cha demanded. "Genocide isn't enough. You're a kidnapper now."
"You climbed the rungs on the ladder of sin in an odd order, Cha Ragor."
Thanos did not look up from the hologram. He wanted to observe the moment she awoke.
"There is killing people as quickly and cleanly as possible, and then there is abducting them and... What are your plans?"
Thanos sighed. Cha had a tendency to forget to whom he spoke. Their long friendship accorded him a measure of respect and a tolerance for overstepping his boundaries. And Thanos was genuinely grateful for the endless hours of work Cha had dedicated to the cause of saving lives. But he was tiring of Cha's liberties. So long as he spoke so in private, that was one thing. If he dared to challenge Thanos before the other, or the girl...
"She ignored every survival instinct in her body," Thanos said, his voice reverent, his eyes still locked on her tiny, slumbering form. "The mother cowered when she should have fought, leaving her daughter to act as a living shield. And against all odds, against every possible shred of logic and reason, Gamora did exactly that, even when faced with an army and a clearly superior opponent. You can't invent that, Cha. You can't manufacture that kind of heart."
"Will you turn and look at me at least?"
Cha asked.
"No. I'm watching my child."
Cha stepped around Thanos. He didn't dare interfere with the hologram, but he stood just to its left,
hovering at the edge of Thanos' vision. She's not your child, Thanos. She had parents.
She's an orphan. I'm adopting her. It's quite simple.
May I ask why?
Cha asked, exasperated. Thanos sighed. He didn't feel like explaining himself, to Cha or to anyone else. He had an army, a disciplined, lethal, obedient army. At his word, he could lay siege to entire worlds, obliterate armies, massacre whole species into extinction. But it was always at his order. He had to be the one in command of everything, at all times. The Chitauri could hardly think for themselves. They couldn't plot or plan or strategize. And Cha, while capable, was no tactical thinker. He kept the ships running and the supply lines stocked and humming, but he couldn't prosecute a war. He had no stomach for the necessary brutality of it, and no mind for the planning of it. Even Ebony Maw and the others fell victim to their own sycophancy and awe. They could not plan on a global scale. But this girl, this raw, untapped potential, oh, the things he could teach her to do. Do you really want to be a father? Cha asked gently.
I cannot live forever. If I die with my great work undone, and the odds are that I will, then someone needs to carry on in my name.
Why her? There are the others, like Ebony Maw.
They came to me late in life. She is still a child. I can mold her, recast her in my image. We laid waste to Zihoberai. We took the only thing from that planet worth taking. She is the very best of them, and that should be preserved. We will raise her, teach her to lead our armies. We have the finest army in the galaxy, perhaps the universe. We will make her its head.
The Chitauri don't know how to teach, Cha protested. They have a hive mind. They learn instantly from one another, so they've never had to develop any method for education.
Then I will teach her myself.
He grinned.
Look, Cha. She's awake.
They sat across from each other at a table in Thanos' personal chambers. He'd had the table brought in and set up by two Chitauri, since he usually ate his meals on the bridge in the commander's chair. It felt strange to sit at a table, to have another person sitting across from him. Her fear and uncertainty came off her in waves. He let her eat. She was ravenous and devoured everything put before her.
Are you going to kill me?
She asked eventually.
No.
He was surprised to hear the horror in his voice. Until that very moment, he hadn't realized how invested he was in her.
I saved your life. I have no intention of ending it.
She considered this for long, silent moments, until finally saying,
You spared my life. There's a difference.
He grinned. Such mental dexterity in one so young. He'd chosen her wisely.
I'm pleased that you're so well-spoken. It betokens an orderly mind. You are mature and intelligent beyond your years.
Why did you do it?
Gamora asked.
Did they really have to die?
He nodded sadly.
I wish it were not so. I truly do. But the universe is out of balance, my dear Gamora. Were it not so, I would be happy on some backwater world in a forgettable part of the galaxy, doing something simple and durable. Perhaps farming, but I have a greater responsibility, one I cannot shirk.
Her eyes darted back and forth as she digested what he'd said.
What do you mean?
Where there is imbalance, I bring balance,
he told her.
Where there are worlds and people in distress, I bring relief and mercy.
He paused for just a moment.
I won't lie to you, child. This means I kill a great many people. I don't want to do this. I take no pleasure in it. But it must be done.
Why does it have to be you?
He allowed himself a moment to enjoy her. Just a moment. She'd smoothly skipped over the issue of what he did, accepting its necessity. She was a miracle.
Because I am the only one who can.
What about me?
I want to offer you an opportunity. To join with me. To become my right hand. Your species has a set of interesting and helpful physical characteristics. Your epidermis is more durable than a typical bipedal mammal's, shielding you from some levels of physical harm. Your muscle tissues are denser than usual as well, which accounts for the strength you exhibit even at such a young age. This makes you a perfect candidate to stand at my side. To learn the ways of war, of death, of necessary brutality. To be the extension of my arm throughout the galaxy as I do what others are too stupid or too cowardly to do.
And what's that?
Save the future. Through reason, preferably. But with blood and fire if need be.
You want me to be a soldier?
His eyes widened.
No,
he exclaimed.
No, no. I want you to be my heir. You will be by my side. You will reshape worlds with me. It will be a magnificent life, child.
I have a question,
she said somewhat timorously.
Of course.
What's your name?
She asked. He hesitated only a moment.
Call me Father.
She was smart and mature for her age, but still, it would take a long time for them to bond, for her to learn to trust. That was okay. They had a long time. The distances between planetary systems were great, and even at light speed, it could take weeks or months to traverse those distances. He began her training in earnest immediately, clearing out space on his cargo vessel Mercy to act as a rifle range, sparring ring, and gymnasium. She had natural talent and the advantages of youth and evolution on her side. But he was pitiless in his training. He set Chitauri on her in practice sessions, using actual battle staves and ordered to kill her.
It's too dangerous, Cha cautioned him the first time.
She'll survive or she won't,
Thanos said, with a stoic tone he did not completely feel.
If she does, she'll improve. If not, she was never meant to stand at my side.
In her first scrimmage, locked in a room and told to escape, she killed two full-grown Chitauri and injured a third. Bruised and burned by a battle staff, she stumbled to the door, figured out how to operate the keypad, and opened it. The injured Chitauri made a last attempt to stop her. She trapped it in the door and slammed it on her way out, bashing the Chitauri's head into paste as she collapsed in the outer corridor.
See?
Thanos told Cha, pleased.
Luck,
Cha sniffed.
If so, it will wear out soon enough and will be done.
Her luck held long enough for her skill to catch up. As they traveled from world to world, slaughtering populations, Thanos continued training Gamora. She grew strong, powerful, confident. After each session, he personally attended to her wounds with a gentleness that surprised him. He'd thought his capacity for tenderness to have been exhausted years ago. Gamora made him want to take care of her.
I know this seems cruel,
he told her more than once.
I know I seem cruel. But everything I do for you, for your generation, and your progeny, and their progeny, and so on. These actions will kill despair and enliven hope.
I believe you, Father, she replied.
Thanos could not prevent a broad smile from creasing his face.
Why are you smiling?
She asked, flexing her arm. She'd been cut almost to the bone in her left forearm during a fight with one of the Chitauri's best warriors. She was almost 10 years old, and her body was scarred like that of a grizzled veteran.
There are few pleasures in my life. One of them is hearing you call me Father.
She took his hand in hers. Her hand was larger now than it had been that first day on Zihoberi, when she'd barely been able to clutch his finger. He squeezed, felt the heat of her flesh, the thrum of her blood. His daughter. His daughter.
She will grow to hate you,
Cha warned later when they were alone.
You slew her family. Right now she is enamored of you. Your power enthralls her. Your generosity dazzles her. But as she grows more and more powerful, she will begin to wonder why she should suffer you to live.
In her own way, she loves me, Thanos replied. She strives to better herself, to better prepare to be my right hand.
Keep an eye on your right hand,
Cha said mordantly.
It may slit your throat.
Thanos grunted in something like assent. If the time came that Gamora truly believed she could kill him, then that would mean only that she was truly ready and worthy to stand by his side. Fighting endless hordes of Chitauri and weaklings on the planets they raised, though, had taken her as far as it could. It was time for more.
I think she needs a sibling, he told Cha.
Thanos put out the word to Ebony Maw and his ilk that he needed another child, one preferably close to Gamora's age. His studies indicated that this would provide optimal opportunities for bonding. Maw and the others paraded before him a plethora of children scavenged from the smoking ruins of a multitude of worlds. Proxima Midnight, though, turned up a girl with disconcertingly purple-tinged blue skin, not the same as Thanos' own, but close enough that he wondered what his life might have been like had he been born on her world, not his. At first he dismissed her. Her quaking form offered no challenge to Gamora, who desperately needed a sparring partner more ambitious than the endless parade of Chitauri she had taken to killing almost casually during her training sessions. But that skin. He could not look away from her. She was small, hairless with no pupils, and the shade of her skin was so close to purple that he thought she could almost be his. He crouched by her and took her chin between his thumb and forefinger, tilting her face up so they gazed into each other's eyes.
Welcome to Sanctuary, my dear, he told her.
Chapter 35 The girls, Gamora and the new one, Nebula, got along as well as could be expected. For a time, this pleased Thanos, to witness the sisterly bonds forming between them, their common experiences forging a potent and lasting welded seam of affection. This lasted for the first month or so, at which point he realized that if the two of them thought of each other as allies, they would inevitably mount a united offense against him, utterly counter to the point to having them in the first place. He needed them loyal to him, not to each other. And so he began testing them against each other, manipulating them into each other's orbits, forcing them into conflict as often as Thanos could come up with a new test. To his pleasure, they each failed, no matter how hard they tried. They were almost evenly matched, with Gamora more often than not having the upper hand. She could best Nebula, but never land the killing blow. It was the best possible training for both of them.
And will you be adopting more war orphans?
Cha asked with some asperity as Thanos watched them spar.
Should I retrofit Sanctuary to serve as an orphanage in addition to a capital ship?
Thanos grunted.
I'm serious, Thanos. When you took Gamora on, I understood. You happened upon her, you were struck. Coincidences often pave the way to finding our place in the order of the universe. And yet,
Thanos cut off his friend with a single raised hand.
Two of them will be enough for now, he conceded. Look at them fight, as though born to the pits of hell.
Yes, you've conjured quite a pair of demons, Thanos.
Thanos clucked his tongue.
No, no, not demons, Cha. My daughters, they will always be by my side.
They would just as soon rip out your heart as shield it,
Cha warned.
That will change in time.
I wish I could be as certain as you are, old friend. As it stands, I think you're just whetting the blade that will eventually open your jugular.
With a deep chuckle, Thanos turned away from the window into the training room.
Trust me, Cha. I've thought this through. The best brainwashing allows the subject a modicum of independent thought. I allow Gamora and Nebula to hate me because it makes them think they still have choices and free will. But they are too accustomed to this life now. They've ingested my philosophy and accepted my dominance, whether they realize it or not. They are my children, and while children may hate their parents, they rarely raise a hand to them.
Rarely?
Cha said dryly. And Thanos thought, unbidden, shockingly, of Alars, for the first time for the first time since that day, 50 stories beneath the surface of Titan. For the first time since he'd hacked the synth's head off and smashed the hope of Titan under his boot. He had killed the synth that wore his father's face and spoke in his father's voice, but he knew that he never could have done that to his true father. No matter how much he loathed Alars, no matter how much he despised the man for condemning Gwynth and Sinta and Suisan and millions of others to unnecessary death, he could not have killed him. The proof lay in the simple fact that he hadn't. That when presented with his father's recalcitrance, he hadn't simply killed him and moved on with his plans, unfettered. He had been younger then, yes, and not yet inculcated by war in the ways of violence. But even in his youth, he'd known what death was, how expedient it could be. Still, he'd not killed Alars.
I will be...
He paused, captivated by the sight inside the training room. Gamora had broken Nebula's battle staff, along with her left leg. But Nebula had managed to climb onto a stack of crates, just out of Gamora's reach. Every time Gamora thrust her staff at Nebula, Nebula pulled back just enough to evade the blow. They were stalemated. This is how it went, constantly. Gamora bested Nebula, who managed to find a way to keep from being thoroughly defeated. She never lost, but she never came close to winning, either.
Do we still have the leftover biofusers from the last round of Chitauri upgrades?
Thanos asked. Cha blinked.
Well, yes, but we don't need...
Come with me.
Thanos thumbed open the door and stepped inside. Nebula saw him first, and there was a palpable sense of relief from her. He disliked that she saw him as her savior, rather than relying on herself. Gamora sensed his presence a moment later. She turned and collapsed her battle staff, standing at attention.
Thanos, she said stiffly.
Relax, my daughter.
He held out a hand to help the injured Nebula down from the safety of her perch. She took the hand and limped her way down, finally leaning into him when she had the floor under her feet.
What happened, my child? How did she beat you?
I didn't see her.
Ah,
said Thanos, and jammed his thumb into Nebula's left eye.
Thanos!
Cha erupted, and sped to Nebula's side. She had dropped to her knees, keening in pain. Her hands clapped to the empty socket, which bled profusely. Without shifting his attention from the motionless Gamora, Thanos spoke.
She said she could not see. We'll biofuse an enhanced eye into her. Perhaps that will help, going forward. Take her to the medical bay for the procedure, Cha.
He did not move or even glance away from Gamora as Cha escorted Nebula, limping on her broken leg, one hand over her socket, from the training room. A spotty thread of blood trailed her. Gamora's expression had not changed in the slightest during the entire exchange. He stared at her in the growing silence as she pointedly did not look back, anchoring her gaze instead off into the middle distance over his shoulder, as though he were not even present.
Do you think me cruel?
He asked at last. There was a great hesitation as she thought, and then finally she met his eyes with her own and said,
Yes.
Thanos smiled. He had decided during the hesitation that had she said no or failed to look him in the eye, he would have killed her.
I'm so very proud of you,
he told her. Words he'd never spoken or heard before. After she adjusted to her new eye, Nebula did better in her next match against Gamora. She still didn't win, though.
See how she does with new knees,
Thanos instructed Cha. Chapter 36. In his personal chambers, Thanos sat at an interface desk, preparing plans for his next assault. His army no longer used gates to travel, unless they chanced upon one of the old Kalami gates. Security around most gates made it difficult for someone as notorious as Thanos to use them, so they relied on super light speed for most of their travel. Even so, the great distances between systems meant long stretches of space, with plenty of time for thinking and strategizing. For each world he tried to persuade, Thanos tailored his message intricately, and at the same time, prepared for war. Because, well, Cha signaled before coming in this time. Thanos did not look up as the door slid open. Cha was silent for too long, hovering over Thanos' shoulder.
Speak, my friend.
A long pause. Then,
is it fulfilling, Thanos?
Is what fulfilling?
The girls. What you do with them.
Being a father to these girls?
He cogitated on the question for a long moment, then took another.
Yes, it is.
Perhaps it's time to reconsider what we are doing, then.
Thanos looked up from his interface desk. Cha had long ago become part of the background of the ship, one more piece in the puzzle he assembled on a regular basis in an attempt to understand and guide the universe. Now, though, looking at his old friend, Thanos thought he could see the entirety of their history together, written in the fine lines and crenellations on his face. They had been at war, at wars, really, for years now. War had only made Thanos stronger and more certain of his path. As for Cha, Thanos could see, now, the weakness that roiled in his friend, the fractures in his beliefs and their relationship that had grown over time with each billion slaughtered.
You think I would settle down, Cha? Settle for the pleasures of parenthood, when there is a universe out there in desperate need of the sort of help only I can provide?
Well,
I will not be derelict in my duty. I will not surrender my mission, my cause. I take pleasure in my children because they are my finest tools, the expression of my abilities and my knowledge and my destiny. Without the mission, we are purposeless and nomadic, Cha. Put the thought out of your head. Be strong.
Cha opened his mouth to speak. But just then an alarm klaxon rang. They stared at each other. The klaxons never rang. Thanos leaped up from his desk, and together they dashed to the bridge, where the other sat in the command chair, hissing to himself. At Thanos's entrance, he stood and gestured at the main screen.
Surrounded, Lord Thanos,
he grumbled in his slow, over-enunciated voice.
15 of them. Nova Corps Star Blasters.
Should have expected this day to come, Thanos muttered. But we're nowhere near Xandarian space.
I guess they decided to take the initiative,
Cha told him.
Prepare the Leviathans?
Yes, and open a comms channel to the lead Xandarian ship. I'll stall.
A moment later, the main screen flickered and flared to life. A hologram distended from it, forming into a long-forgotten but immediately familiar face.
Dakan Ro, Thanos said,
almost pleased.
You never took that early retirement. Your husband must be devastated.
Ro's face had changed not much in the intervening years, save for some wrinkles around his eyes and perhaps a slight lengthening of his forehead. He grimaced.
My husband passed 3 years ago, Thanos.
You have my sincere condolences.
Somehow, I believe you.
I rarely lie.
No, but you've managed to kill a whole hell of a lot of people since the last time I saw you. Body count is something like
Half a trillion.
Thanos shrugged.
I haven't been keeping track. I've not touched Xandar. Your world is in wondrous balance. And the last time I checked Denarian Row, none of my incursions have been into any Xandarian territory. The Nova Corps has no jurisdiction over me.
Row shook his head.
The other systems and territories are terrified of you. They've requested our help under the terms of the Treaty of Mazar. And don't ask, it was signed something like 10,000 years ago. But it's still enforceable.
And so you're here to kill me?
To arrest you, if possible. Come quietly.
Roe paused, licked his lips.
I heard about Titan. What happened there? Pretty horrible. But you can't bring those people back by killing your way across the universe.
I'm not trying to bring them back.
Thanos caught a gesture from Cha out of the corner of his eye. The Leviathans were in place.
I'm trying to save lives.
If you don't mind my saying so, you sure have a funny way of showing it.
Ro, you were kind to me at a time in my life when I needed kindness. In acknowledgement of that, I'm going to give you 30 seconds to reverse your course and go back to Xandar.
Ro smirked.
One, I'm afraid I can't do that. Two, I have 15 Nova Corps ships with solar guns aimed at your shield pods and engine core.
20 seconds,
Thanos said.
How's this for acknowledging kindness?
Ro said.
I'll actually let you get to zero before I blow you out of space.
10 seconds,
Thanos said, and at the same time signaled Cha to attack. In anticipation of the day when some foolish world or desperate system or ignorant space pirate would attempt to blast him out of existence, Thanos had taken the precaution of having 10 Leviathans trail the rest of his fleet at a distance of roughly 1 light minute. They were spread out far enough that to normal sensors they simply appeared to be asteroidal space debris. During his conversation with Takan Ro, those 10 living ships had closed the light-minute distance to the Nova Corps starblasters. With 10 seconds left on Thanos' countdown, they attacked. On screen, Takan Ro's hologram gasped and turned. Over the audio of the comms channel, Thanos heard panicked cries and shouts of alarm.
What the hell?
Ro exclaimed, looking around.
Thanos! What the hell?
The Leviathans did not so much assail the ships as they swarmed on them. They insinuated themselves into the Nova Corps' attack formation so swiftly that the ships couldn't fire without potentially hitting their own vessels. Lightning blasts sizzled from the Leviathans' blast ports, and the great beasts twitched their muscled lengths as they coursed through the ship's assault pattern. The vacuum-hardened outer carapaces of the Leviathans plowed through the alloy hulls of the ships, ripping them open to the empty death of space. Takan Ro's hologram fuzzed, sparked, then collapsed into dead static. The assault took only a few minutes. When it was over, one Leviathan was dead, 2 were wounded, and all 15 star blasters were obliterated. Debris, bodies, and globules of blood drifted in the zero-gravity tomb of deep space.
I rarely lie, Thanos said to the empty screen. But rarely does not mean never.
Thanos leaned back in his chair and steepled his fingers before him.
As I was saying, Cha, I will not surrender. I will not give up. Life needs me on its side.
Cha clucked his tongue and gestured outside the main pulso-glass portal. An exploded Xandarian corpse drifted by, caught by the microgravity generated by Sanctuary's mass. The body would orbit the ship like a broken, bloody moon, until they increased speed to the point that friction would burn it to ash.
Yes, life needs you,
Cha said, without a trace of sarcasm.
Your point is taken.
Thanos heaved himself out of his chair.
Perhaps there is another way. Only a fool or a zealot clings to his original plan and does not seek new methods of attaining his goal.
I'm pleased you distinguish between fools and zealots,
Cha said happily.
A mistake I won't make again,
Thanos said,